This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Welcome to Specsaver, sir. How can I help?
Hello. I'm a senior, and I've heard that for eligible seniors, of which I am one, Specsavers are giving 50% off lens upgrades on their glasses, like thinner and lighter lenses or a sun tint. For seniors.
You don't look senior. You have to be 65 or over to get this offer.
Here's my ID, which is definitely not a fake.
Yeah, this says you were born in 1877.
Happy birthday
to me. Seniors get 50% off lens upgrades at Specsavers. Conditions and exclusions apply. See specsavers.ca.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio. Sitting in for Libby, here is Tasha Kiridan.
Happy Monday to you. Hope you had a great weekend. We certainly did here at the Zoomerplex, where over 2,000 people visited during Doors Open Toronto, getting a backstage pass to see just how the magic is made at our TV and radio stations. And across town, I participated with over 56,000 people in the Walk with Israel March as part of Allies for a Strong Canada. The event was amazing. It was a vibrant celebration of Jewish life and culture, and really a moving experience of solidarity with the Jewish community in our city at a time when it is needed more than ever. And now it's time to get back to work here with our Zoomer squad coming up, tackling the stories that are making waves this week. As you heard, Mark Carney and, all of Parliament is back in business, preparing for a very, very busy few weeks, according to the Prime Minister. But what exactly can we expect as Parliament reopens? In Canada Post, it's the opposite. They're not as busy because, they're not doing any overtime while management reconsiders an offer. The union is standing firm. We'll see if we end up with a postal strike or not. But for now, we have a disruption, and we'll ask our panel what they think this will do to the Postal Service long-term and short-term as their volumes of mail go down. Then at 12:30, we're going to welcome royal biographer Robert Hardman, who's the author of The Making of a King, King Charles III and the Modern Monarchy. And he's going to chat about the upcoming visit, starting today, of King Charles and Queen Camilla here in Canada. At 12:45, we're going to round out the show with a provocative question. Should it be mandatory for young newcomers to Canada to join the Cadet Corps to learn more about Canada's history and values? As always, we welcome your points of view to the show. Give us a call, 416-360-0740, or toll free, 1-866-740-4740.
And now, time for the Zoomer Squad.
All right. On the line with us, we have Liz West, host of the Afternoon Express here on Zoomer Radio, David Valentin, principal at Liaison Strategies, and John Mikitishin, conservative activist, political consultant, and president of Bradgate Research Group. Welcome, everyone.
Hi, Tasha.
Glad to be here.
All right. Are you all excited for the return of Parliament? Mark Carney says the government's going to act with urgency and determination. Question is, of course, on what? Liz, start with you. What do you think is going to be top of his agenda when Parliament comes back?
Well, I'm really interested in hearing what he's going to do with the interprovincial trade barriers, and I'll tell you why. What are they, and why did we need them before? I mean, I think some Canadians might go, wait a sec, we had barriers. I know I can't buy a bottle of wine from BC. I figured that out because I like my wine. But I don't know what the other barriers are. So, but I am interested in knowing why we had them, because he said he's looking at removing them and making it easier so we have more of an economy in the country. Sounds like a great idea, but I think there's a lot of education here.
Yeah, definitely will be. And those barriers, some of them I know also, apart from the booze, which all of us know about, things like mobility for workers in different industries, construction and the like. So, yes, that will be really important to look at. David, what do you think is going to be on the menu for the new government?
I think the big question for me is what we see in terms of tariff relief. And now that we are on the other end of the election, you know, some of the tariffs were suspended. Some of them are still in place. We hear 70% of them are in place. But what is Canadian industry now going to see in terms of relief from the tariff agenda that has been waged for Mr. Trump. I think getting the specifics on that is going to be hugely important.
Okay, John, what are you watching for?
I'm just watching to see what he says and then what happens. If you think with every prime minister, they come in and they have a... Do you remember the phrase, sunny ways?
I do.
And you know what? Talk about the gloomiest, grayest, depressing days of all time is what we ended up with. So it'll be a great speech. They always are. And the question is, will he actually move fast? He's certainly not moving fast on a budget. He's certainly not, you know, so this is his test, right? Does he move fast? For me, it's also echo whether or not we're looking at an election in 36 months, 48 months, or 12. If he sets out to actually do things quickly and gets peace with Trump and steals the conservative playbook on law and order, he'd have enough right there to go to the polls quicker than anybody's thinking and catch people off guard.
Yeah, that is true. At the same time, probably some of the other parties, certainly the NDP, which doesn't have party status now, by the way, would not necessarily welcome a quick election. So I'm wondering here, as we watch the government, which is still a minority for now anyway, at least they've got 169 seats. Liz, how do you think that will affect the way they work in this new parliament?
Well, I have no idea how it's going to work. It sounds like it probably is not going to work very well. But if you look at Parliament, I mean, it often is a bit dysfunctional. So will we notice it? I doubt it.
Okay. I think that the issue of the NDP is something that a lot of people were wondering how that was going to work out, because with the few seats that are there that the Liberals are missing, David, do you think they're going to spend some time now trying to pick off some of the NDP members, since the NDP has no party status, they're not going to have a budget? Do you think there could be temptation for some of those people to cross the floor?
I think they've already begun their campaign to do so. And I think in that respect, NDP National Council has sort of helped things along. We saw three NDP MPs write a letter basically spelling out they were not consulted on who the interim leader should be. A caucus of seven people, three of them women, coming forward to say, hey, none of us were asked anything about this. And the NDP National Council basically decided to do whatever they wanted and make Don Davies the interim leader. There would be my first three targets to ask them if they would like to cross the floor, right? Mm-hmm. Here are people who won their election under very challenging circumstances, and the NDP National Council basically said, we don't care what you think.
Yeah, and the Conservatives, John, where do they figure into all this? Because Pierre Poilievre is saying that they are going to, you know, provide a united front on certain things with the government. They want tariffs, for example, to be lifted. But at the same time, they're the opposition. They've got to oppose. How do you think they're going to approach this new session?
Well, hopefully better than they did in the last parliament. The one idea that comes to my mind is on the issue of supporting the Ukraine. When the government wanted to give the Ukraine money to support them in the war, but they put a poison pill in about conditions of how the money had to be spent that were environmental. And the Conservatives couldn't look past that and had to oppose it. So it's going to be, again, fascinating whether the Prime Minister gives them clear policies like bail reform or bail reform for certain types of people that mm-hmm. would, you know, run counter to what Conservatives believe. So the devil is in the details, as it always is in Parliament.
Yeah, there's a lot of devils in this session potentially, too, because, you know, we are dealing with the tariffs. We're dealing with those internal trade barriers, as you mentioned, Liz. A lot of things that the government has. And one of the other devils that they're going to be facing is the national unity one, which is coming not this time from Quebec, but from Alberta, which wants to hold a referendum by 2026, potentially on separation. How do you see that playing into the new session of Parliament? You know, we've got the Conservative Premier in Alberta, Daniel Smith, who'll be making a lot of noise. But you also have Conservatives in the House of Commons, some of whom from Alberta, their constituents might support that very idea. How do you think, or what advice would you give to Mark Carney to handle the separation issue as Parliament unfolds?
Well, I think this is going to be a real test of his diplomatic skills, you know, in order to build consensus, which could be a little bit in his favor, given that he's not a party politician, like a career politician. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a newly elected official. I suspect he will do better than someone who had been an elected official like Pierre Poilievre, for example, who doesn't have as much flexibility to find the common ground because it's so steeped in party politics. So I think that Carney, I mean, assuming he had to find consensus in his professional career, as we all do, especially if you're a leader, I suspect he will have some natural training. Because it often is something that leaders are trained to build. That skill may not come naturally, and there are skills to bringing people together and to hearing people and their issues that a politician who doesn't have to necessarily go to leadership training would know. So I think we might see some positive results here.
Well, we certainly hope so. And, you know, you raise a good point. Poilievre is not only an Albertan, but he's running. He's running. He's going to be running in a by-election there. He's already said he's not in favor of Alberta separation, which as a federal leader, you would expect. But that is waking some waves in Alberta, too. John, I'm going to throw that one to you as to how you think Poilievre will be dealing with that. You know how Carney might deal with it from Liz, but how will Poilievre deal with it when he's going to be courting voters who might not agree with his stance on that?
Well, I think he'll go to the root cause, right? And the root cause is Albertans and many in the West feel ignored by Ottawa, not included, and worse, disrespected. And that's not Pierre. You know, Pierre totally is open to the West. And if he had won the election, the West would have been ecstatic. So he's going to campaign in the by-election to say this was the last election was a setback. The real answer to get everything they want is to elect him in the by-election and then elect him as the next prime minister.
Okay. Well, that pitch, I mean, certainly he can make the pitch. I'm wondering how those voices, though, if they start challenging him from inside or Daniel Smith ends up offside, how that'll work out. David, what do you think that could look like for both federal leaders and also, interestingly enough, for the Bloc Québécois, which is, you know, making some noises on the eastern side of things, too, with Quebec as a PQ party there, the Parti Québécois, that's looking pretty strong for their next election. Do you think you could end up with a situation actually of separation raising its head on both sides of Canada?
It's always possible. What I will say is that Daniel Smith has lowered the bar for a referendum. So I think a referendum in Alberta is going to happen one way or another now. It will take a lot to stop that train from leaving the station. And so you will have that situation where the PQ is going to be likely in charge in Quebec. They sort of slow down their timetable for a referendum simply because voters in Quebec don't want one. And so you're going to end up with a situation where conservative politicians in Alberta, whether they're members of the United Conservative Provincial Caucus or the Federal Conservative Caucus, are going to be, in many cases, holding views that are diametrically opposed from their constituents. And what will be really interesting to see is if a new party pops up, either provincially or federally, to clamor for separatism. Could there be a Bloc Québécois of Alberta? And we sort of know what the consequences of that would be, which is that you would end up splitting the vote and letting other more progressive parties win, predominantly in urban seats in Calgary and Edmonton. So it'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out. But I think a referendum in Alberta is going to happen one way or another.
I think we had that party. It was called the Reform Party. Yeah, I remember it. except it didn't call for separation. What was so interesting about the Reform Party and the difference now is the Reform Party was all about the West wants in to Confederation, and now we're seeing these voices that are saying the West wants out. And they're not necessarily federal, but they're very loud. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. One something else we're keeping an eye on is, of course, the visit of King Charles and Camilla to Canada. And I'm going to be talking about that with our royal biographer at 12:30. But I do want to just unpack it a bit with you as well, because, you know, it's something that raises a lot of emotion among many Canadians. Some people are not liking it, though. In Quebec, there's a big hue and cry about King Charles coming. So politically, it sort of plays on both sides. Liz, how are you feeling about the visit and, you know, opening Parliament with King Charles? Does it resonate with you? Sorry, Liz? Did we lose Liz? Okay, I'll ask John. How do you feel about...
No, I'm right here.
Oh,
I'm
you're
right
there.
Here.
Okay, great.
I'm sorry. Buttons are small sometimes. I have big thumbs. Okay. so originally, I was pretty pleased, you know, that King Charles was going to... I feel like it adds some weight to the event, a little heft, right? At a time where we're kind of being bandied around by the president of the U.S., I think, though, it also shines a bit of a spotlight on the fact that as a country, we still have a dependency on others, or maybe it's a lack of complete independence as a nation, in that we have this connection, and many people are not in favor, and many are in favor of our connection with the UK. But it's interesting because it really just reinforces that we're kind of the little brother or sister to either nation, which, I wonder if that's something we need to think more about.
The elephant to the south. And I don't know what animal we would call the UK. Maybe someone can come up with that. I don't know. David, do you, if we had to say, we're the mouse, US is the elephant. What's the UK in all this? What is King Charles in all this?
Maybe a very regal bear.
Bear. Okay.
Paddington bear.
That's not very regal, but it's actually very cute.
But it fits. Yeah.
It would fit. David, how do you feel about the royal visit? And, from a political angle, is this playing the Trump card, so to speak? Or are there other messages in here?
It's going to have a limited impact. And I think the people that this is going to resonate with the most are monarchists and anti-monarchists, right? But I think, we'll be talking about this in a month, unlikely. So I think it's a nice sort of injection. It's good for Mr. Carney to show that he has that heft. He obviously has met the king on several occasions before in his other capacities as governor of the Bank of England. So it's good for him to show that he has these international connections that he can get in here. Not since the 70s have we had something similar. That's all well and good. But I think, 2 months from now, 3 months from now, not very many of us are going to be talking about this, aside from those of us who purchased a commemorative stamp.
Or maybe a commemorative Paddington bear. I'm having visions of that now. There's always tons of royal souvenirs that are sold around these times. That could be a cute one. John, what is your takeaway from the royal visit from a political standpoint? Is this going to help Mark Carney? The fact that he obviously could pull some personal strings probably to get King Charles to come here. He's got a lot of connections overseas. Is this going to help him or hurt him going forward?
I think it's going to help him a lot. And I think it's another example of the difference between him and Trudeau. The last 3 years of Trudeau, I couldn't understand most of anything he did or why. Whereas with Carney, this is a brilliant move that sends a signal to Trump, reminds Canadians of their heritage, reminds them of their overseas connections. And we like a little bit of pomp and ceremony. We Canadians don't have disdain for that. They like that. So it's turned the chapter for Carney. He's resetting Parliament. But it will only last for so long. But everybody who can will be within the sight line of the king while he's in Canada. And they're going to like that. And my fellow panelist is right. The haters will hate because that's what they do. But monarchists will be happy. I'm a second generation Canadian of Ukrainian heritage. So we have no ancestral attachment to the king or the monarchy, but as a teenager, I became a monarchist because that's part of Canada. That's Canadian history. That's the reality. So it's, but it's rarely trouted out. And Carney has done a brilliant move by bringing the king, and he'll get a great week or two out of it. And then we'll get back to reality and it'll disappear.
Yeah, and part of that reality is going to be dealing with the last story we're going to tackle right now, which is Canada Post. And here I'm going to actually reach out to our listeners, too. As you know, Canada Post is threatening to strike again. And they have a work slowdown in progress now because the union has decided not to do any overtime until the negotiations are resolved one way or the other. How do you feel about Canada Post right now? Would you miss it if it disappeared? Are you mad that they might be on strike again? Does it affect you at all or does it affect you a lot? 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. I'm going to ask our guests too, starting with you, Liz. You know, Canada Post, I personally don't get a ton of mail, but a lot of our listeners, a lot of seniors still do. How serious do you think it will be if they can't resolve this dispute and they end up on strike?
Well, I've just switched my mother, who's 90, from receiving her bank statements by mail. I proved to her that I could print them off the app if I had it on my phone for her and hand them over. And so she's accepted that. And she would be a big hurdle. My mother is your perfect hurdle, and mm-hmm. she totally gets it. But really, it's also Canada Post delivers packages as well. I mean, plenty of our things that we order online. I think ultimately, if they've lost $750 million in 2023, then the model doesn't work. And it's whether or not the union can be worked with in order to understand that it's in a crisis. So, it's like, do you want to have a business at all at this point? I find it really frustrating that this is up for debate right now.
Yeah, it is frustrating for a lot of people because we feel like we just saw this movie, you know, a few months ago and now it is happening again. I've got a caller already on this. Another Liz. Hi, Liz on the phone. What is your thought about Canada Post? Are you mad? Would you miss them?
Well, if you had asked me last week, I would have been mad and I would have missed them. But because I received my daughter's wedding invitation in the mail on Thursday, I'm not so concerned. However, I love my letter carrier. He is terrific. I feel bad for them. I don't want them to lose their job and their security and everything. But really, I don't need the mail to be delivered. It's mostly junk mail. I certainly don't need it every day. I wouldn't mind doing what they do up north, going and, you know, opening a box and getting my own mail. I wouldn't. I don't mind. I'm a senior, but I'm a young senior.
So okay. Well, I'm glad you got that invitation. That is right under the wire there, so that's good because, you know, it's slowing down right now. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. David, let me ask you, you know, Canada Post is saying one of the things is, well, we're losing money. We should just not deliver the mail door to door anymore. I mean, when you've got situations like this, is this like the death knell essentially for their service? Because people are just going to get fed up and, like Liz's mother, like, okay, you know, it's like switch to online service instead.
Well, it's important to recognize that neither solution from Canada Post or the union would solve the business model, right? Neither of them are putting together proposals right now that would actually stabilize Canada Post finances. And to a certain extent, you know, we have more and more homes to deliver mail to. We build more homes every year, but less people receive fewer amounts of mail. And Canada's always going to have a problem in that you have to deliver mail to places. It will never be cost effective to do so, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about rural, remote, and northern communities. There will never be a way to make money by delivering mail to Newfoundland and Labrador. Yeah. So to a certain extent, we have to figure out how much I think we want to subsidize this too, if we're going to continue to have it. But I mean, you could implement all of the corporation's reforms tomorrow. It will, the company will still not be financially stable. You could do everything the union wants to do in terms of their proposals for banking and all sorts of stuff they put forward. That will not solve the problem too. Okay. So really, we're talking about kicking it down the road right now.
Yeah, we've been kicking it for a while. Let me take Ruth here on the line. Hi, Ruth. What are your thoughts on the future?
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you so much. I am a senior. I'm a shut-in. I can't go to a box. I can't go to get my groceries or anything else. I rely on the mail. I don't have a computer anymore. I still knew how to do those things, but I can't do them anymore either. So I'm one of many of seniors, and I imagine even younger people than myself that I've met over the years in hospitals, etc., that they need the post office, and it's never going to have to go away because we need them. Not only that, if the union would at least have a sense of anything and understand where we are in this world today, the reality, they would understand that the things that they got before, they can't get now. And they have to accommodate themselves as well as the people that they deal with. I have a postman, many postmen now. I used to have women, I used to have men. I never knew who was coming to the door, but they always knocked on my door and said, "Are you all right?"
Oh.
And that was a pleasure, and they still have that. And if you need an elastic band or something, do you have one? they're right there for me.
They have I'm those. Telling, yeah.
Yeah, they have it. And they'll share it, as they say. But nevertheless, aside from the nonsense I'm saying, I do need that mail. I get my statement because I can't go to a computer. Mm-hmm. And and my children have enough to look after me, as well as, you know, I have an amputee husband as well. And so there's a situation with others, I'm sure, like me, that require that post office and that post box under my door. Yeah, my home.
Oh, I hear you.
And I appreciate it. Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you for taking over for Libby. And I look forward to her in good health and everything. And thank you for also walking. A lot of my girlfriends who are not Jewish walked with them yesterday, and they had amazing time. There was one person that was arrested, but nevertheless, at least it went well. And I'm thankful for everything.
It did. No, thank you for that, too. And thank you. It was an amazing experience.
God bless.
Thank you, Ruth. It was that Ruth was talking about the March for Israel, which was yesterday here in Toronto. All right. We're already past the clock. Unfortunately, I know this is a popular topic, but I'm going to have to say goodbye to our three excellent guests, Liz West, David Valentin, and John Mikitishin, our Zoomer squad for today. Canada Post isn't going away, so we'll be taking your calls on that another time absolutely soon. But in the meantime, we're going to talk everything royal when we come back after this short break, the visit of King Charles and Queen Camilla.
Welcome to Specsavers, sir. How can I help?
Hello. I'm a senior, and I've heard that for eligible seniors, of which I am one, Specsavers are giving 50% off lens upgrades on their glasses, like thinner and lighter lenses or a sun tint. For seniors.
You don't look senior. You have to be 65 or over to get this offer.
Here's my ID, which is definitely not a fake.
Yeah, this says you were born in 1877.
Happy birthday
to seniors get 50% off lens upgrades at Specsavers. Conditions and exclusions apply. See specsavers.ca.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio with guest host Tasha Kiridan.
Ottawa is awash in pomp and circumstance as King Charles and Queen Camilla arrive in the nation's capital today. They're going to be opening the 45th session of Parliament with a throne speech tomorrow. And it's a historic visit with some serious political overtones, too. So we're going to unpack all of that today with a special guest, Robert Hardman, who is the author of King Charles III, New King, New Court. He is joining us on the line. Welcome, Robert.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. Are you excited about this visit?
Yeah, I mean, this is a proper historic glamour visit. When I think back to all the royal visits to Canada over the years, you've got to get back quite a long way to find one as important as this, as pivotal as this.
Yes, well, I have a picture in my head of Queen Elizabeth signing, you know, our new constitution. I never saw her deliver the throne speech. She did it a couple of times, but I have that image still of her sitting there with Pierre Elliott Trudeau, Prime Minister, and they're both smiling and signing this document. And you know that's sort of etched there because it was a very important moment both historically, politically, but Canada's connection to the crown is still a living thing. How do you see that playing out this week? What are you looking for tomorrow?
Well, I think you're right to recall that historic moment in 1981, I think it was, where mm-hmm. there she was. She'd flown over just to sign this document. And, you know, I think in Britain, people often just think of, you know, the royal family as, you know, our head of state, which, of course, the king is. And we have to remind ourselves that he is king of 14 other countries behind. And as soon as he sets foot on a Canadian plane, he is the king of Canada and is answerable to his Canadian prime minister and his Canadian government and the people of Canada. And Britain effectively just has to take a back seat.
Yeah, it's funny. It does. We sort of don't think of him as our king day to day, but he still is. I want to ask our listeners, too, who are listening in, if you are, how you're looking at this visit this week, because some people are very much in favor. Some people are maybe not, don't care as much. But what are your thoughts, if you want to share them with us as well? 416-360-0740 and 1-866-740-4740 are the numbers to call. How are you feeling about the visit of King Charles and Queen Camilla? What does it mean to you this week? And Robert, I want to ask you also what it means politically, because a lot of people are saying this visit is aimed at sending a message to Donald Trump. Do you read it that way?
I think the king's primary concern is sending a message to the people of Canada. He is ultimately a public servant. Like I say, he answers to his ministers in his realm, in this case, Canada. But clearly everyone's well aware that this is going to be a message that's followed very closely in both Washington and in London. I think if we just look back in, you know, recent weeks, how the king has been building up to this. There's been a lot of quiet, what I might call maple leaf diplomacy going on. You know, he's welcomed two prime ministers to his home. He's had members of the Canadian Senate have been through London, so the Canadian Black Rod. On all his speeches during his recent state visit to Italy, a constant reference to the role of British and Canadian troops in the liberation of Italy and role in the Second World War. We've had VE Day again there, lots of references to the important role of Canada. So I think, you know, he's going as king. He's also going as head of the armed forces. Subtext to all this is the sort of shared sacrifice, that shared history, and a history that, in fact, of course, America's been very much a part of as well. So I think he will be looking to as it were, apply balm and basically leave everyone feeling better about themselves. The megaphone diplomacy, that's for the politicians.
Yeah, how does he navigate that line? Because we know that Parliament is supreme. It's a constitutional monarchy. The king or queen, the king in this case, cannot be overtly political. But like you said, there are signs he can send. How does he navigate that?
Well, he's been around in international public life probably for longer than certainly any public figure in Britain, and I imagine in Canada too. You know, he's started undertaking these sort of diplomatic trips as a Prince of Wales 50 years ago. He will know the constraints and the boundaries. In his case, it's going to be very much stressing why and how he is a proud King of Canada and the great things about Canada. The kind of the hands-off message, that's more for the politicians. But, you know, there's still all sorts of subliminal messaging in all the pageantry that you've referred to, in all these sort of important strands of Canadian sovereignty that'll be on display. It does send out a powerful message without a sort of explicit, hardball political dialogue.
And the speech he reads tomorrow, does he have any input into that at all, or is it just a read?
It's a very interesting one. If you look back at the two speeches from the throne by the late Queen, the first one in 1957, and that's when she actually opened Parliament, it began with quite a bit of what you might call personal reflection on what it meant to her to be there. And then towards the end, it did start getting into what you might call a more sort of traditional policy framework. My government will do this, we'll do that. I think she announced plans for a new dam in Saskatchewan. And then if you look at her speech from the throne in 1977, that was her Silver Jubilee. It was much shorter. It was not opening Parliament. And that was really just a sort of celebration, very much in her words, of how she saw the sort of the quintessential qualities of Canadians and of being Canadian. So that one was a bit more personal. I would expect tomorrow we'll certainly have some personal. It'll have a sort of Charles stamp on it, but it will also have a Carney stamp on it.
Yeah, and that's an interesting relationship the two have. Prime Minister Carney personally invited King Charles to open Parliament. How important is that relationship, do you think, behind the scenes to making this visit happen?
Oh, I mean, it's crucial. I mean, the monarch. I mean, they retain strong relations with the prime ministers and the governments of all the realms. I think what's at the back of the king's mind is actually he would have loved to have come to Canada sooner since becoming king. It was, you know, being penciled in for last year, but then of course his cancer diagnosis prevented that. And then by the time he was well enough to start travelling long haul again, Canada was in a sort of on an election footing. And one rule is that, you know, royals never go anywhere where there's an election in prospect. Mm. So it's if you like, it's been hanging around this for some time. And I think, you know, he's been to Australia now since becoming king, and to the Commonwealth Summit in Samoa, and he's made a few state visits around Europe. And this is I think that the feeling is this trip is overdue anyway, quite regardless of whatever noises are coming out of Washington.
Yeah, and it is something that has been welcomed in many parts of Canada, not so much in the province of Quebec. We, in fact, had statements made by the federal party, that is the Bloc Québécois, that represents the interests, they say, of Quebec. They started as a separatist party. They don't love the monarchy. They don't like that the king is going to be speaking in the House of Commons. Do you think this visit threatens division? And if so, how could Charles, how would the monarchy approach that issue to try and mitigate it?
Well, I mean, royal memories are very long. So actually, I'm quite sure the king will be very familiar with some of the issues, some of the problems his mother faced on her trips to Canada. I think particularly back to 1964, when we really did have a sort of serious constitutional problem, because there were very major anti-royal demonstrations being planned in Quebec. There were all sorts of hysterical headlines in the British press. I think even talk of Cuban assassins hiding in the woods. I mean, all sorts of crazy stuff in the British press. And there were MPs in the British Parliament saying the Queen should call off her trip to Canada. And of course, her Canadian Prime Minister saying, no, you're very much invited. And she very much went. Those were problems then. I think it was the phrase used in the Canadian press. They talked about truncheon Saturday because of the police response to some of these demonstrations. And this has been an occasional feature on royal tours to Canada over the years. And it happens in other countries too. The royals are pretty used to this. As I say, he is a public servant. He goes where his Canadian government, elected by the Canadian people, ask him to go. And of course, some people are going to be anti-royalists. There's quite a vociferous, what we call Republican movement here in Britain. They do turn up at events and, wave flags and banners and shout stuff. But, you know, as long as the settled view of the large majority of people is that they are happy with the constitutional monarchy, then the constitutional monarch will do what he's asked to do.
And he will be coming and doing that exact thing. We're all going to be watching it, of course, with bated breath. I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Robert Hardman, journalist and author of several books on
thank
the monarchy,
you.
Including Charles III, New King, New Court, The Inside Story and Queen of Our Times, The Life of Elizabeth II. So you can pick those up and take a read. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
All right, we're going to take one call, though, before we go, which is another Rob we have here, who says that he's not a fan of the monarchy, as we were just talking. Rob, I'll squeeze you into this this segment. What do you think about what you just heard?
This is Rob in Ottawa.
Yes, it is. Hi.
Okay. No, I didn't say I wasn't a fan of the monarchy. What I said was is that since 1931, the British Statute of Westminster in 1931, the British monarchy has had no de facto, real de facto power, constitutional power in Canada. And then that was even furthered a little bit more in 1982 with the Constitution Act. So the king, the monarchy is just a symbolic situation. So the only real question to me is do you like that symbolism or not? Do you like the symbolism? Mm-hmm. But there is no constitutional power except in a real crisis, as I think you know, where in a close election, it's unclear who the government should be. And I don't think that's happened since 1926 with the King Bing thing. So it's not going to happen very often. So we are completely independent de facto, although symbolically, there is some ties.
Yep, there certainly still are, but you're right. It is a constitutional monarchy is not obviously controlling parliament, and so we have a different relationship and have a different relationship as Britain does too when kings were originally empowered before the 17th century. But I want to thank you so much too for your call, and we're going to be taking more calls after the break on another subject. Get ready for this one. New Canadians be required to do mandatory cadet service to learn more about our country? There's a military figure who says yes. We're going to talk to a couple of guests about that, but we'd like to get your take on it. 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. Should mandatory military service for cadets come back for newcomers to Canada? Stay with us on Fight Back.
Welcome to Specsavers, sir. How can I help?
Hello. I'm a senior, and I've heard that for eligible seniors, of which I am one, Specsavers are giving 50% off lens upgrades on their glasses, like thinner and lighter lenses or a sun tint. For seniors.
You don't look senior. You have to be 65 or over to get this offer.
Here's my ID, which is definitely not a fake.
Yeah, this says you were born in 1877.
Happy birthday
seniors
to
seniors get 50% off lens upgrades at Specsavers. Conditions and exclusions apply. See specsavers.ca.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one.
Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio with guest host Tasha Kiridan.
Welcome back. A nice patriotic message there. And we're going to talk now about some more patriotic issues. In an article in the National Post, former honorary colonel of the Royal Hamilton Light Infantry, Donald Cranston, suggested that all young newcomers to Canada should be required to serve in Cadets Canada. That's a question on its own, and it also raises the broader issue of how we boost enrollment in our military in general, especially at a time where, as a country, we're being asked to step up in our contributions to NATO and North American defense. To talk about that, we welcome your calls, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. And we also have two great guests, Charlotte Duval-L'Antoine, who is Vice President of the Ottawa Operations and Fellow at the Canadian Global Affairs Institute, and Dr. Paul Mitchell, Professor at the Canadian Forces College here in Toronto. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Charlotte Duval-L'Antoine, I'll start with you. What do you think of this idea of having newcomers to Canada have mandatory service in cadets? Is that a good thing to do?
Well, it's complicated, and I'm saying that as a recent Canadian citizen myself. I don't think it is a bad idea, but then the question is, would it create two classes of citizens, right? Naturalized Canadian citizens do have to go through a lot of processes and spending a lot of money to join Canada as a society and become Canadian themselves. So is it another step for them to having to prove again that they do want to join Canada? And they do. There is maybe enough patriotism in them to accept that. But then The additional thing is that today permanent residents can join the Canadian military, and they are. They're actually driving a good portion of recruitment today. So there are multiple questions to ask. What job are they going to do, and what is the end goal there, and what is it going to cost those people to be able to do this?
Yeah. Dr. Mitchell, what are your views? Does this proposal have any possibility? Would it be a good thing or not?
So I'm actually an ex-cadet, and you know, it's a great organization. All three of the cadet organizations. I'm getting a bit of feedback here.
Oh, we hear you just fine.
I'm sorry, I can hear my voice echoing here. I'm really sorry about
okay,
that.
No worries. If you know what, our producer will just chat with you and fix that up. We'll get back to you in a second. Charlotte, I'll ask Duval Antoine, I'll ask you a question. You mentioned actually that most of the recruitment, or much of the recruitment, is coming from newcomers regardless. In fact, the same article in the Post noted that 70% of cadets in Toronto are, as is called, noticeable minorities, so people who are not of a necessarily Canadian background, born in Canada background. So is this is there a reason you think that newcomers are perhaps more attracted than the native-born Canadians to military service and to the cadets? Does it offer them something special? And is that something that you think should actually be, could be promoted as something attractive when coming to Canada?
It's the drivers for recruitment and joining the military are complex. But one thing that we know from political participation and voting, for example, newcomers in a country are actually significant drivers to political participation because they feel a sense of patriotism. And that goes back to one thing that I mentioned earlier. Newcomers are actually coming to Canada because they want to come to Canada. It's a choice that they made, and they're doing a lot of things to join this country. And there's also a sense of feeling welcome and wanting to give back to the society. And this is why a lot of people decide to join the military as a way of giving back. There's also the fact that in certain cultures, of newcomers, joining the military is an honor, and there are certain expectations about joining the military of the country in which they find themselves. So there's already dynamics in play that make people from maybe first generation or second generation immigrants that make them more likely to join the military.
Okay, Dr. Mitchell, I think we have you back now. So you mentioned you were a cadet yourself. What was your experience like, and in terms of answering this question, what could you draw from it to say, you know, this could be a good thing? Maybe more than just new Canadians, maybe all Canadians should do some kind of cadet service when they're younger. What say you?
So I think the cadet organization is like one of the best youth organizations in the country. It's absolutely amazing. You can travel across the country. You can get a pilot's license if you're an air cadet. You know, the leadership skills that are developed within the organization are outstanding. The thing that I would say, however, is actually, you know, when you go into a modern air cadet squadron or an army cadet or a sea cadet organization, you'll see that it is already pretty multicultural already. And I think it's really reflecting the nature of the country. But the thing that makes it really powerful is that it's voluntary. So you get kids that are really interested in joining and taking advantage of the program. If you made it mandatory, I think you would lose a lot of that stuff, and it might actually bring down the ability of these organizations to excel, because you have probably a population of kids who don't necessarily want to do these sorts of things. You know, it's not for everybody.
Okay. No, but I mean, we see that with the general military service. I actually want to take a caller on that, because Brian in Mimico, you think that military service would be a good idea for everybody. Can you explain?
Yeah, well, having joined what was then the militia at 16, I think it'd be a good idea. I think they're reserves now. But join, you're in serve of the militia, 16 to 18, 2 years. It's part-time. You get paid for it. You can still go to school. You go to your job and everything else. But you get that discipline and training and everything else that comes with joining up for 2 years. And I think everybody could use that. You certainly see a lot less gangs and everything else on the street with that sort of thing. I think it would work out very, very well.
Okay. Thank you for that. You know, some people say that other countries that do have compulsory military service, thinking of Israel, for example, it breeds a sense of civic participation, giving back to your country. Charlotte Duval-Lantoine, do you think that is something that Canada could look at too, especially when we're being asked to ramp up our military ranks? It might be a way of introducing young people to what military service even is that they may never have considered before.
That's true, and that is the thing. The reserves in Canada exist in a period of growth, and I think that that would be a fantastic idea to have people do do that kind of service. There's also, if you want to introduce people to the idea of military service without committing them to full-time, there is the Naval Experience Program, where people can join the Navy for a year and kind of try different trades within the Navy before they can commit. So that's just a one-year program. That is an excellent idea. But coming from France, I would like to add that in France, you can do military service. It's voluntary. But you also have something like the civil service. So for a year, you can take a gap year, and it's you're paid by the state to contribute to society. So there are different ways of doing this. And really what the question is, what is the goal of this? Is it national unity? Then a civil service might be more useful. If it is to ramp up the Canadian Armed Forces ranks, the main issue with the Canadian Armed Forces right now is not the lack of people wanting to join the Canadian military. It's the military not being able to process them fastly enough. So then we won't fix the problem by putting more people through the system.
Yeah, it's also the fact that retaining them sometimes is difficult. I'm going to give John in Brantford, you got 10 seconds here, John, to make your point because we're up against the clock. What would you like to say about the military service in Canada?
Yeah, I just feel that a boy and a girl who is 18 years old and is not going to post-secondary education should spend 2 years in the Army. Mm-hmm. Militarize our society because, you know, I mean, ever since this guy south of the border came in, they could just invade us easy, and we don't have a militarized society.
Okay.
But if we have children who are trained militarily, so if we are invaded, then we can just call them up and give them guns and whatever because they're already trained.
Okay, thank you for that. Hopefully we won't be invaded, but I do see your point. I'm going to give the last comment actually to Dr. Mitchell on that really quickly. Do you think that this could also be a deterrent if Canada beefed up its military with compulsory service?
I have a problem with that, and I agree with the previous speaker in the sense that, you know, right now, the challenge is actually training all the people coming. Mm. And we've had a lot of trouble in, because of the shortages of personnel, that you don't have enough people to train. And so people sit around in waiting depots and such for courses. And a lot of people decide to leave the services before they actually get trained because they just feel like this isn't what I signed up for.
Yeah, and that should not be happening. So if military leaders are listening, better ways of retaining people, more training, and making sure people get in quicker. That will have to be our show for today. Thank you so much, both Charlotte Duval-Lantoine and Dr. Paul Mitchell. I'm Tasha Carradine signing off here for Libby's Nimer. See you tomorrow. Have a wonderful afternoon.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one.
Welcome to Specsavers, sir. How can I help?
Hello. I'm a senior, and I've heard that for eligible seniors, of which I am one, Specsavers are giving 50% off lens upgrades on their glasses, like thinner and lighter lenses or a sun tint. for seniors.
You don't look senior. You have to be 65 or over to get this offer.
Here's my ID, which is definitely not a fake.
Yeah, this says you were born in 1877.
Happy birthday
to seniors get 50% off lens upgrades at Specsavers. Conditions and exclusions apply. See specsavers.ca.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.